Blog Talk Radio.
Studios in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 26th of September. My goodness, how the fall is just right here and how September's flying by. Again, I want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And of course, to all my friends for the good old U.S. of A. They can write the show's inbox at any time, folks, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer all my emails promptly, so write to me, and I will get back to you. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, right away, folks, let me know, and I'll make sure to put it on the broadcast. Again, you can follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. Also, follow me on Instagram as well, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Click the like button, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, folks, so don't be shy. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Once you go on the website, in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that, and you're automatically enrolled free of charge in the morning intelligence briefing. So during the morning when you're having your breakfast, when you're watching some of these sports debate shows like I like to watch, you know, whether it's First Things First on Fox Sports or Get Up on ESPN. Normally, I don't like Get Up. I think it's kind of like a garbage show. But again, whether it's First Take later in the morning or Undisputed with Skip and Shannon or even The Herd, believe me, if I'm home and I'm scrolling through my phone in my inbox, believe me, the morning intelligence briefing tells me everything I need to know about the political scene in New Jersey. Again, just a better than Insider NJ. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, but of course, follow them on Twitter, folks. Many outstanding columnists. Certainly, we had a great Millennial Power List published, and certainly coming up, we have a great LGBT Power List that will be online soon, courtesy of one of our outstanding columnists, Jay Lasseter, here on the Insider NJ team, so stay tuned for that one. It is something you definitely don't want to miss. And again, folks, don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the manager, the journalist, or the staff. Folks, again, I hope you had a wonderful week. Obviously, the first week of fall doesn't really feel like it since Mother Nature doesn't seem to be cooperating. Some warm weather is still hanging around, which is fine. But again, folks, as the fall is upon us, remember the baseball playoffs begin next week. NFL well underway, and certainly for some of the local teams, hey, maybe not as great as they'd like to be. My Dallas Cowboys, on the other hand, 3-0 in first place, looking to become 4-0 this weekend, and hopefully they can sneak a road win in the Big Easy as they head down to New Orleans to battle the Saints. We'll find out, folks, and again, I know for my South Jersey fans listening tonight, I know your Eagles down 7-0 in the second quarter. Actually, it's still a pretty close game since I don't think the Packers are very good, but we'll find out again as the Eagles will try to get to 500 tonight and help perhaps win at Lambeau Field. Folks, again, 818-572-8032. Toll free number tonight. Again, talking about Insider NJ. We have a wonderful guest, folks, coming up in just a few moments. But as always, I'd like to start off my show, and I'm thinking about, quite honestly, listen, let me be very fair here. I'm thinking about the impact that liberal professors have on our college campuses, and it's not a good one, and I'll tell you why. And that is the subject of my first shot. Well, folks, it was interesting because I came across an article this week on Yahoo News. Yes, I know, Yahoo News, which sometimes we don't always read. But from time to time, they'll publish a very insightful and informative article, like anything else, folks. You know, Clock is also right twice a day, too. And, you know, again, occasionally Yahoo News will entertain me and even sometimes inform me. But it was really interesting because they brought to my attention a recent survey of 1,000 Republican and conservative-leaning college students that had found 73% of them have hidden their political views in the classroom because they were worried that exposing them could negatively impact their grades. Well, listen, it's alarming, ladies and gentlemen, how polarizing it's become on our college campuses. Now, I've lived it as a student, both during my undergraduate studies and my graduate studies at Rutgers University, but more so for some time now teaching in higher education and obviously having to tolerate very liberal colleagues. Now, listen, let's be very fair. It's very difficult for conservatives to get hired, and once hired, it's difficult for them to even get promotion and even tenure, particularly in the humanities and social sciences, wherein, let's be honest, the liberal orthodoxy reigns supreme. And unfortunately, this has resulted in fewer conservatives finding their way into academia as a profession, which liberals disingenuously claim is the result of universities having limited economic attraction for those on the right, not as a result of unfair practices. And let's be fair, you know, universities, because they tend to be leaning very liberal, not because they don't have money, they're just choosing not to hire conservative professors. And that's truly a shame. And it was interesting because, yeah, the article I came across this week, College Pulse, conducted an online poll as recently as August for a conservative campus news source called The College Fix, which has previously reported on its findings. Now, the survey polled conservative-leaning students only. Now, according to The Fix, aspirants, quote, have you ever witnessed your political views in class for fear they agreed with someone? Well, sadly, 73% of students who consider themselves to have strong Republican views said yes, as well as 71% of them with weak Republican views, and also 70% of conservative-leaning independents as well. Now, the huge percentage of conservative students responding to this is disheartening, but it's not shocking. I mean, there are numerous examples of professors and faculty on multiple college campuses all across the country who have chosen to make patriotic conservatives known. For example, administrators at Middlebury College apologized to students who were upset that a conservative speaker had been invited to campus, and pledged to do more to prevent conservative speakers in the future. Recently, in 2017, a Clemson University professor declared in a Facebook post that, quote, all Republicans are racist and scum. In 2015, a journalism instructor at Mississippi State University compared a conservative students group to the KKK. Even back in 2014, a University of Michigan department chairwoman published an article titled, It's Okay to Hate Republicans. Now, first of all, let me be clear about the fact that I completely and totally support the First Amendment. And I absolutely understand that college professors and other employees do and should have the right to express their views. Thing is, though, they should really take more care to keep their comments to be more along the lines of policy discussions and avoid demonizing entire groups of people based on the fact that they're on the opposite side of the political spectrum. Now, truly, I believe that our country would be a better place if everyone tried to maintain this kind of civility. But educators should especially want to adhere to it for the sake of the students that they are tasked with teaching. Now, it's obvious how Republican students would be helped by this approach. Right? Such huge numbers of conservatives and Republicans alike, you know, that are too uncomfortable to share their honest views in the classroom for fear of getting a lower grade because of it. Well, the fact is that they're not getting the kind of educational experience that they deserve. And for the money that they're paying, they're getting shortchanged. Now, no student should ever feel uncomfortable in the classroom simply because he or she is Republican or a conservative. After all, college is supposed to be that place, folks, where people with all different kinds of views can feel free to express them and have them challenged so that they can learn and grow. And Republicans and conservatives are missing out on that sort of valuable expression. Which brings me now to my second point, the status quo doesn't just hurt Republican and conservative students, it hurts liberal students as well. Now think about it. If Republicans are missing out on the valuable learning experience of having their views challenged because they do not feel that they can express them honestly, then liberal students are missing out on the same experience because they don't have anyone challenging theirs. So it's true. Yes, many college campuses are liberal echo chambers. Liberal students and liberal professors are constantly reassuring each other of the correctness of the liberal position and point of view without anyone ever exposing them to other points of view. The problem is, though, that this sort of environment will inevitably result in liberal students who graduate from these same colleges never having had the experience of defending their views or considering any other ones, which leaves them quite ill-prepared to engage politically in a real world that very much does include people who feel differently than them. So in order to allow students to have the most educational experience possible, what I'm arguing is that these institutions should be encouraging its faculty and professors to demonstrate respect for people with different ideas. And that's just not happening, ladies and gentlemen. And one of the things that really upsets me, again, working in academia, is the fact that most of my colleagues are indeed liberal. And I can tolerate them, sure. I try not to converse with them too often because it gets like, I don't know, I'm losing brain cells. But the fact of the matter is this, that, you know, at the end of the day, I always find the conversations funny because many liberals that I know always sort of preach about tolerance. Many liberals like to preach about the fact that they're the more informed or more enlightened ones. That, again, it's all about tolerance. Well, the problem is that it's disingenuous, and I don't believe it for a minute. Yeah, sure, they're tolerant, but they're tolerant about things that they agree with or that they like to hear. So if they don't like something or they're not in agreement with a specific policy position or any sort of viewpoint, believe me, it's a tsunami of personal attacks and smears. I've seen it forever. I saw it in undergrad and I saw it in graduate school. Folks, my program was a very liberal program in the Division of Global Affairs. And I had a lot of liberal classmates and I had some liberal professors. But I always felt the need to, like, not challenge them, but to speak my mind. And believe it or not, I actually had, I'll never forget her, Dr. Elizabeth Hull, who is an outstanding political science professor. At the time, I know that when I was in grad school at Rutgers, she was the chair of the political science department. And I remember that I never was disrespectful in class, but I always felt the need to always express my views, especially in a political science course. And I remember it was constitutional law class, and I also took it for an American government class. And I remember her telling me at the end of the semester and saying, you know what, some of your presentations I wasn't always keen on, but you always defended your positions well. And I have to tell you, Fernando, you were one of the very few conservative students I've ever given an A to. And while that made me happy, I think it also kind of made me sad because I was thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, have other conservative students like maybe faced their ire? Have other conservative students maybe not gotten the benefit of the doubt that I did? Now, listen, I totally deserve both A's. But I worked hard for them, and I also expressed my viewpoints in the classroom in a way that was constructive and articulate. I don't think that always happens, folks. And I think that what's really transpiring in a lot of college campuses across this country is the idea that people aren't, especially faculty members, are not being tolerant. And as I said before, we're not doing this monologue. This is the reason why I think a lot of liberals that graduate from undergrad and graduate schools are ill-prepared to engage politically in real-world discussions because guess what? They've never been trained to deal with people that, frankly, may feel differently than them. And again, this is something, and I say this a lot tonight, any administrators listening, to any faculty members listening, in order to allow students, again, to have the most educational college experience possible, I'm urging institutions of learning that they should be encouraging their faculty members to demonstrate respect for people with different ideas. Even if you don't like what you hear, you still need to hear them. And I think that's one of the disservices that liberal college professors are doing to academia and to higher education. Listen, folks, this isn't conjecture. This isn't something I'm fabricating. This isn't some hyperbole. This isn't some manufactured hysteria. I've seen it. I lived it as a student, both undergraduate and in graduate studies, and live it as a faculty member because I see how my colleagues treat some students who I know are conservatives. As soon as they've told me, hey, Dr. Uribe, I took so-and-so for this class. I'm so glad I'm taking it with you because I know I can sort of speak freely in your classroom and I can't speak in his or hers. That's sad. And when I've heard that, it's almost made me want to, like, go up to my fellow faculty members and be like, what's wrong with you? Like, your job is to teach, not indoctrinate. Your job is to teach, not brainwash. I don't know. I just think it's one of those things where it's really, really, I think, a disservice. And as I said, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that people should be more inclined, I think, to, you know, like anything else, you know, be honest in the classroom and, you know, enjoy the college experience. And I'm hoping that my faculty members that are hearing me tonight are listening. And that's my first shot right here on Politically Direct. Folks, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight. Again, brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, check out Insider NJ, go to InsiderNJ.com. The best columnists, the best journalism that you will find, without question, courtesy of Insider NJ. Starts with the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, certainly working its way down the line to colleagues such as Fred Snowflake, Al Sullivan, you know, the kind of journalism, of course, Jay Lasser, and many, many more. So, listen, I'm glad to be part of the team, and without question, I'm glad to participate in what we're doing at Insider NJ, and certainly here on Politically Direct. Folks, 818-572-8032, we'll take some calls there in the show. Here at 9:15 on the East Coast, it is my pleasure to welcome to the program one of my good friends that I have an immense amount of respect for, and a guy who's, I'll tell you, whose fashion, I think, kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's competitive with my own. I mean, this guy has the nicest suits you'll ever see, and I'm sometimes jealous about his sort of his attire, but he's doing something right, and he's doing something right as the executive director of Garden State Equality. Folks, our friend Christian Priscarino joins us tonight on Politically Direct. Brother, what's going on?
Hey, Fernando, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I want to make sure I gave you a little bit of a plug there. I love your suits, man. You're always like a sharp dresser, man. It's just as someone who takes pride in his suits, you know, I go to Express and get my nice fitted suits, man. You're always rocking it out every time I see you on social media. So God bless you there, Christian. How was your summer, man?
I appreciate all those compliments. I assure you that most of my suits come from JCPenney's. It's pretty easy when the only color I really wear is blue, but I appreciate the compliment. You're a pretty sharp dresser yourself.
Oh,
and
thank you, brother. Thank you.
And thank you so much for inviting me back onto the show.
Oh, no, listen, you're always a great guest, Christian. And listen, again, folks, if you're not familiar, again, my guest tonight, Christian Priscarino, is the executive director of Garden State Equality. For those of you that are not aware, Garden State Equality is the statewide advocacy and educational organization for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community here in New Jersey. You can check it out at www.gardenstateequality.org. Do me a favor, folks, at the upper right-hand corner, there's a donate button. Hey, I know we're back in fall. I know, especially with October around the corner, everyone looks for pumpkin lattes and everything else. Do me a favor. If you're having coffees 5 days a week, have them only 3 days. Those are the 2 days. Save those. Save that money. At the end of the month, take that amount, click on the button, donate to Garden State Equality. They're doing good work there here in New Jersey. I told you, Christian, I always like to plug you, man. I always like to plug your organization. And I like to, that's as quick a plug as I'll ever get, I think, on this program and try to get you some money with the organization. So good stuff with what you're doing, brother. Christian, let's get started here. A lot going on in New Jersey. I think first and foremost, what dominated the headlines, I think, for a lot of 2019 was the legislature making the decision to, in both chambers, to pass a law incorporating LGBT curriculum into our public school. Now, again, you'll have to educate me on this, man. It's my understanding that the curriculum would take effect during the fall 2020 school year. I know it was signed by the governor this year. I'm not sure that it goes into effect in the next academic school year, but I know that some school districts have already introduced it. Could you tell us a little bit more about this process and sort of like the long journey to get here, man?
Yeah, absolutely. We're so fortunate here in New Jersey to have a legislature that has passed a law that will require New Jersey schools to be teaching LGBTQ inclusive curriculum. California is currently the only other state in the nation that is teaching LGBTQ inclusive curriculum, and they are only teaching LGBTQ history. We're going to be teaching LGBTQ subjects all across all relevant areas. And so beginning in fall 2020, all New Jersey public schools will begin teaching the social, political, and economic contributions of LGBTQ people. And the curriculum is going to be integrated year-round across all relevant subjects for grades 6 through 12. The reason that this is so important is because LGBTQ youth deserve to see themselves reflected in the classroom. We know that schools that teach LGBTQ inclusive curriculum have lower rates of bullying, harassment, and intimidation. And so if we can take this small step as a state to move in the right direction of including the LGBTQ community's contributions to our society by teaching it in schools, I think that is the, again, like I said, the least that we can do. Also, we want young people to learn in a safe and affirming environment, and we know that students that feel safe and comfortable in school are less likely to skip it if they can see themselves reflected in the lessons. So we are trying to work with other partners throughout the state, and we're also taking the lead by developing this curriculum that we will offer to New Jersey schools for free. The curriculum is going to be piloted in roughly a dozen schools starting in this January. So January 2020, around a dozen schools in New Jersey will be piloting Garden State Equality's curriculum. And then we'll be taking the lessons from that and improving it for the fall 2020 mandate. It's important to note that these lessons are being designed by a diverse team of curriculum writers who are experts in the education space. These are folks that we have brought into the organization. And while we have a very talented staff at Garden State Equality, this needs to be done by professionals who are in New Jersey schools. And so the team that we've put together, the writers that we've brought on, are experts in that space.
All right. Well, listen, and I appreciate you really breaking that down for us tonight, Christian, because, and I've talked about it on this program before. I mean, listen, I'm a staunch advocate of you guys at GSC. I know you do very good work. And, you know, as someone who has a lot of friends in the LGBT community, I saw it firsthand, whether it was living away in New Brunswick during my undergraduate studies at Rutgers University or meeting so many of them during my graduate studies at Rutgers in Newark. At a very young age, I learned that tolerance. I learned that level of acceptance. I mean, I learned it from my parents at a very young age with family acquaintances and friends that we knew, you know, who were LGBT. And, you know, at a very young age, I got that instilled in me about the importance of tolerance and, you know, treating people fairly. And that's one of the things that I've always respected about GSC's mission statement is the fact of doing, you know, being such champions of that cause. And something I wanted to sort of ask you today, because I think it's interesting about the acronym itself. And I know that over time, whether it's not policy-based, but maybe ideologically, but for a very long time, I think that, you know, we sort of went with the acronym LGBT. And now certainly, you know, we see the acronym sort of modified to include the Q. And then as I'm trying to read up on, you know, what is the Q for, it certainly stands for queer. Does it seem like, have you ever heard anyone say to you, for example, hey, LGBTQ, I don't know, it sounds kind of, first of all, it's long, but doesn't it seem kind of like somewhat repetitive? Because I think whether it's mainstream or even contemporary sort of like, you know, teachings or anything else, Christian, doesn't it seem like if you're incorporating the Q, isn't the G already in there? I mean, again, I'm not trying to sound ignorant. And again, for my audience, I'm just trying to, you know, get answers here, because I think a lot of people would say, wait a minute, now all of a sudden it's LGBTQ. Where did that come from? Was there some sort of social cause that may put this about? Could you give us a little bit of a historical narrative here, Christian, for my audience that maybe isn't sure why the acronym sort of recently changed?
Sure. And Fernando, I appreciate you start opening up this program by encouraging folks to go to the Garden State Equality website and make a donation. You are a perfect example of how of individuals who may not understand everything related to the LGBT community and the movement, but yet you are a supporter of the organization. And I hope that through the conversations that we have, we're able to build some bridges, because I know that you and I don't see eye to eye on all issues, but at the end of the day, we know that people need to be treated with dignity and respect. And so I really value that. And I really value that in you, and I appreciate your willingness to have such an open dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as LGBT,
that's very nice to say, Chris.
Yeah. Of course. As far as LGBTQ, this is a conversation that takes place within the community and without the community. The bottom line for folks who want to understand why it has changed and evolved over the years is we need to respect people on how they identify. The next generation that is coming up identifies slightly different than previous generations. We certainly aren't using the word homosexual to refer to gay people anymore. That's why we're incorporating the Q into the identity. And being in the LGBTQ community within itself is about inclusivity. And so if there is a group of individuals when related to sexual orientation and gender identity expression that is not feeling included, I think it really speaks to the ability of our community to adapt and embrace folks who are saying that they don't feel included. It's the most basic level of respect to call people what they want to be called. And many in our community from the younger generation are identifying as queer now, and we want to let them know that they have as much stake in this community and in this movement as anyone else.
Well, Christian, let me just ask, because again, I'm going to ask, you know, as I'm always reminded, you know, people say to me, well, you're not really a doctor, you can't prescribe anything. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. I like that joke. It's sort of one that's enduring. But I don't know if it's coming from a biological perspective or if this is something medical. Again, I like to learn new things, Christian. So when we talk about, again, sort of including queer now into the acronym, you know, maybe it's a generational disconnect. Maybe it's just the way we sort of define words. But for a lot of people, you know, let's just say 10 random people, you say, well, if I ask you if someone gay or queer, they might just sort of say, well, they sound like synonyms. They appear to be synonyms. They're very similar. Why now the distinction? Have you ever heard that talking point? And if so, like, how do you reply to that? Because I'm sure I'm not the only person that's ever brought this up, or if it's ever been discussed at panels or workshops or anything.
I just think at the end of the day, it comes down to treating people with respect. The LGBTQ community isn't the only community that has changed identifiers over the years. We as a society are becoming more and more accepting of the sexual orientations and gender identities from the minority community that we know as LGBTQ. And so as we are becoming more open and accepting, I think that's obviously going to be a big factor into why people are now hearing about identities that maybe they had not heard about in you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. But, you know, we're human beings. We know how to adapt. We're a social species. And so I think it's pretty black and white when it comes to just respecting people for how they wish to be identified.
Okay, fair enough. And again, the reason I ask these questions, Christian, is because I'm sure a lot of people in our audience, young, old, middle-aged, whatever, aren't necessarily struggling, I think, with understanding the acronym, but I think sort of just understanding the content and I think the narrative, which is important to, I think, you know, as a teacher, I'm someone that's always about specificity. So I respect that. And that's why one of the reasons I love you as a guest is because, you know, you come out here and you take the time to be specific. specific to be detailed. And I think when it comes to these sort of social issues, it's important to really be patient and to be able to outline this. And you do that very well, Christian. So, again, I have to give you props here. Folks, again, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:30 on the East Coast here on Voice Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have on the Executive Director of Garner State Equality, Mr. Christian Frescarino, here on Public Direct. Check out Garner State Equality by going to the website, www.garnerstateequality.org. Again, as I said, upper right-hand corner, there's a donate button there, folks. Any disposable income, hey, one less coffee you drink a week, hey, click on the button, donate it. Believe me, they can certainly use the help when it comes to funding. Christian, another issue right now, really, I mean, headlines for some time, and I really want to get your thoughts on this because it's not only sort of not necessarily become a political issue or a sociological one, but now it's even sort of infiltrating sports. And I'm a big sports fan. If you check out my social media, I think you know that. I'm a big NFL fan. Love baseball, love every sport possible. I'll watch bowling on ESPN if I have to. But one of the things, Christian, I think that's coming up now in discussion of sports, and it's sort of filtering down, I think, never mind in college, but I think it's filtering down into the high school level, and maybe even middle school, where I think that even, in a society like ours where we put so much emphasis on sports, there seems to be, I think, maybe still some conflict about how to view transgender issues and the transgender community. I think, listen, you're a smart guy. I know you read a lot, as do I. I'm sure we've read about plenty of articles across the country in high schools where parents or activist groups or administrators or whatever, even the athletes themselves, are maybe raising concerns about sort of not necessarily about allowing transgendered students to participate in sports, but the idea of whether or not there's still sort of a certain authenticity to sports, the idea of transgender students, whether it's transgender boys or transgender girls playing in sports, let's say opposite of what, their biological gender was when they were born and now playing in sports. There's been a little bit of an uproar, I think, nationally, not considerably, Christian, but I think some that parents or whoever might say, hey, some of these records or some of these transgender kids playing in sports may be taken away from sort of like the even playing field of that sports is supposed to be. Have you heard that sort of narrative out there? And two, what's your response when, let's say, a parent says, hey, listen, if my little girl is in track and she has to run against a transgender girl, I mean, how is that fair? And how are any of these records sacred, or how are these records sort of consistent? And I know it might sound petty and fickle, Christian, but, parents are parents. And when it comes to sports and athletics, sometimes, they take on a life of their own. And just your thoughts about it, if you've heard about this within the transgender community, and specifically how transgendered kids are sort of adapting to this, let's say, in our school systems.
No, I think that this is a conversation that is the result of lack of proper policies at schools and lack of education. Students should have the right to participate in athletics in a manner that is consistent with their gender identity. I think it's offensive that coaches and teachers are out there telling women that they can't meet the performance of men. This is, in a lot of ways, simple gender discrimination. And we've seen throughout history that women not only meet but exceed the performance of men in many ways. And so we need to just, throw away stereotypes that exist within the sports space. Transgender students in particular in school have the right to participate on a team that matches their gender identity. This is written into Title IX, and so if any school or individuals are saying otherwise, they're not following the law. And I think it's just important to, especially at the school level, to allow young people to play on the sport in that matches their gender identity and expression.
Okay, that's a fair observation. But I have to ask, because I'm sure maybe you've either read about it, or perhaps incidents have been reported to you, or you've firsthand have interacted with administrators, Christian, in your work again as executive director. I mean, you know, what do you say to parents tonight, for example, that might turn around and say, you know, hey, Christian, you know, I have two little girls, they're in high school, and they're track players or they're wrestlers, for example, and they're having to compete against a transgender girl where, you know, biologically they weren't born a girl, for example. And I think we're sort of in a point, Christian, where it's sort of a delicate conversation, right? Because some people might turn around and say, oh my God, those parents are bigots. Those parents are prejudicial. Those parents are discriminatory. But, you know, sometimes parents are parents, man. And you know, they're going to stand up for their kids. And that seems to be sort of like a normal societal thing. Have you heard of these incidents? And then, like, normally when you hear about these cases where parents are going to, like, either raise a stink at their school board or take the social media or take, you know, talk to their local news bureaus and say, hey, you know, my kids, you know, it's not really fair that my kids are playing sports against, let's say, transgender kids, and they have an upper hand for whatever reason. And I'm not sure if I'm explaining this correctly, Christian, but I know you've read about these stories. I know they're out there for public consumption. I mean, does it, you know, what's sort of your perception when you hear parents maybe raising a stink about them?
I think most of the controversy comes from folks who have an agenda. It's not often rooted in reality. And in fact, schools actually approach us to help make their sports more inclusive. They want their school to be welcoming and affirming. And safe sports is, you know, an area that we are investing a lot more in. We have a great partnership with some professional sports teams, including the New Jersey Devils and the New York Red Bulls, Blue Claws, and we're looking at them for best practices when it comes to instituting policy within the school, within the sports space. And then we're matching that with our record of being able to work with schools to create safe and affirming environments. And so this is a space that we're investing more of our time in. And we just want to ensure that any young trans girl or trans boy can play on the sports team that they identify with, and that they live their life authentically off the field and on the field.
Okay.
You know, we're talking a lot about you know, transgender people involved with sports. I'd love to talk a little bit about some transgender leaders that we have in the state of New Jersey, including Jennifer Williams, who is the first transgender candidate to be running for the legislature that we just endorsed today.
I did see that. I did see your endorsement list that just came out this week for assembly candidates. And it's interesting, Christian, because, you know, 2019 is one of those years where, you know, at the top of the ballot, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs. And really, that's what's taking precedence this year. Clearly, there are municipal races all across the state, whether it's the mayor's race in Hasbrook Heights, whether it's city council races in Hoboken, whether it's mayoral races in Bogota, right? So it's all over the state. There are local races. But at the top of the ticket, obviously, it's all 80 assembly seats. And I know that today, with this week, with your publication, obviously a large amount of endorsements. I know up here in Hudson County, where I live, all six assembly men and women, respectively the incumbents running, were endorsed by GSC. Pedro Mejia and, for example, Angelica Jimenez in the 32nd. I know Annette Chaparro and Raj Mukherjee in the 33rd. And then Angela McKnight and Nicholas Cherubalotti in the 31st up here. So they're all solid advocates for GSC, and GSC certainly endorses them. I know you did mention Assemblywoman who you didn't necessarily endorse, but you did sort of highlight and acknowledge her support of the LGBT community. Could that be seen like a little ambiguously though, Christian? Like, if you're, again, I'm not going after you guys. I'm just sort of saying, like, could it be perceived by some in New Jersey that, well, yeah, Assemblywoman, I can't pronounce her name, but I think hopefully you know who I'm referring to, you know, has been an advocate for LGBT causes. I'm sorry?
What legislative district are we talking about?
I have to look at her name. Holly, it'll come to me. I looked at the list briefly
Holly
this week, and I got a – Yes, excuse me. Yeah, thank you. I always mess up her name, and I apologize, Assemblywoman. I know she's listening tonight. She's probably like hating me for not pronouncing your name correctly. But I know you did announce that even though you're not endorsing her, she has been an advocate for LGBT causes. So in that regard, I guess maybe was that sort of like a happy medium or happy compromise?
So we did endorse Assemblywoman Shapizi. We noted that. She's received our endorsement because she's been an advocate on LGBTQ issues for years. She sponsored the Babb-Zipperstein law, and she's always there when we need her support. The only reason that we made a notation on her endorsement is because she didn't vote in favor of LGBTQ inclusive curriculum. And we believe that is such an important law and so not controversial at all, that, you know, we needed to make sure that our community knew where she stood. But again, she did receive an endorsement because she has been a great ally on so many other issues.
Well, Christian,
just,
I have to ask.
And just to be clear, she abstained from from voting. She didn't vote against it, but again, we would have really liked to have had her vote in favor of LGBTQ inclusive curriculum.
Christian, did you get any clarity in terms of why she abstained? I mean, sometimes when legislators choose to abstain from voting on an issue, it just seems either they're not sure or they're just nervous about, you know, voting no and they don't want the repercussions of it. I mean, I think we kind of saw that early this year in March when Governor Murphy was hoping, for example, I mean, I'm not trying to sort of draw a correlation, but in the sense of electorally, I know that when both chambers of the legislature came together, Governor Murphy was hoping that the Assembly and the Senate would be able to muster the votes together to legalize marijuana. And this was March 25th. It was tabled because there weren't a sufficient amount of votes in both chambers. A lot of legislators, both Assemblymen and women and senators, abstained. So whenever I hear that, it's like, well, wait a minute, you're abstaining, so you don't want to vote for it, or you're not sure, or you really like just play it safe and not take a position? Like, I'm always confused about abstaining. Like, how do you view that, sir?
Yeah, we had a conversation in the hallways at the Capitol about where she would land on voting for LGBTQ inclusive curriculum, and I think it was not an issue of lack of education, but rather a difference in personal opinion about teaching LGBTQ inclusive curriculum in school. We knew we had secured the votes for curriculum to pass, so we didn't continue to push the Assemblywoman to vote in favor. But, you know, we had hope that she would. And moving forward, we will continue to reach out to her in hopes that she'll vote in favor of the legislation that we put forward. At the end of the day, she is going to be there on a lot of our issues because we know that she supports the community. I think we just didn't see eye to eye on this one. And so, while she did receive our endorsement, we just needed to make a note that she wasn't exactly there on the curriculum bill.
Okay, interesting. And speaking of the curriculum bill, Christian, I'm sure that this is something that leading up to the vote in the legislature and subsequently being signed into law by Governor Murphy, I don't know what the feedback has been per se, but is there still sort of a tangible reality, man, that some parents across the state might just say, you know what, listen, I'm not bigoted. I'm not prejudiced. I'm not discriminatory. I'm just not a fan of schools teaching that to my kids. As a parent, that's my responsibility. I don't want schools taking that away from me. I'm just not a fan of schools doing that. Very briefly, if you've heard that argument, what's your rebuttal to it?
Well, you can't opt out of LGBTQ inclusive curriculum, just like you can't opt out of learning about contributions from African Americans or women or immigrant communities. These lessons are going to be woven into all relevant lessons throughout the school year. I think, you know, when a parent feels like they don't want their child learning about the LGBTQ community's contributions to our nation, I want to sit down with that parent and let them know what the curriculum actually looks like. And this curriculum will be available online, hopefully through the state. If not, we will be able to offer it to educators, and the parents can speak with the individual school districts about what's in that curriculum. This is about history. This is about contributions made by individuals like James Baldwin and Langston Hughes, I think it's just kind of, when parents feel that way, I think it's a lack of education on what is actually going to be taught. But I imagine that when we started teaching about African American history in schools, there were parents that were reluctant to have their children learn about that. But like, let's take a moment and imagine a scenario where Mayor Pete became president. Are we going to really gloss over the fact that he's the first LGBTQ president and that he is married to a man? We talk about the fact that George Washington was married to Martha. And so this is history, plain and simple.
Sure.
And we're not going
sure.
to leave out contributions from a group of people just because folks don't understand why those contributions are important.
Fair enough, Christian. And again, and one of the great things about you as a guest, man, you come on here and you're very transparent. Before I let you go, I know that you're at a conference, and I really appreciate you taking out some time to come on the show with me. So I'm very, very grateful. Very briefly, I want to thank you for your time tonight because, again, you're always a wonderful guest. I definitely want to have you back on later this fall to sort of maybe talk about, as we get closer to the election day on November 5th, obviously, you know, with the assembly races heating up. Definitely want to have you back on later this fall. But again, this is the time where I give my guests the floor. So if you want to pick my brain, or if you have a commentary to make, or you want to ask me a question, Christian, very briefly, sir, the floor is yours. Again, I appreciate your time tonight, but again, the floor is yours if you want to pick my brain or ask a question away.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It means so much to me that you continue to bring us on to talk about the issues that Garden State Equality is working on, from the work that we're doing in the health and wellness space within hospitals and with healthcare providers, all the way to working in older adult facilities, so that as members of the LGBTQ community age, they can move into a facility where they feel safe and don't have to go back into the closet, all the way to the work that we're doing in schools with anti-bullying programs and LGBTQ inclusive curriculum. I think you probably would be interested in learning more about our law enforcement liaison program, where we're working with law enforcement agencies throughout the state, all the way from the state police down to the local municipalities, to ensure that LGBTQ officers feel valued and comfortable at work so they can perform at their best, but also, more importantly, ensuring that we can have better relations between the LGBT community and the law enforcement community. We For our 2020 agenda, we're looking to ban the gay panic defense, do HIV criminalization reform, and pass the LGBTQ older adults Bill of Rights. And I welcome conversations around those items maybe later this fall with you. I'd love to hear what you think about some of the items that we're pushing moving forward. And I appreciate your patience as I'm wrapping up about a 14-hour day right now at a conference. But I appreciate you bringing me on and for your patience. And I look forward to coming back on to the show sometime later this year.
Yeah, absolutely, Christian. Listen, again, you're a gentleman. Keep up the good work. Folks, again, when you have a chance, go to Garden State Equality's website, www.gardenstateequality.org. Upper right-hand corner, there's the donate button. Click on it. As I said, hey, we all want to get those pumpkin lattes and whatever it else because it's fall. Do me a favor. Instead of buying coffee 5 days a week, buy 2 or 3 days a week. Rack those up at the end of the month. Take that amount. Donate it. They're doing good work, folks, at Garden State Equality. Make sure you support them. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow them on Instagram and Twitter. How do you like that plug, Christian? Listen, I won't take a commission, but I think I'm a good plug man for GSE, bro. What do you think?
I think we'll have to make a position for you here. You're so good.
Well, Christian, listen, thanks for your patience. For the rest of your conference, we appreciate a few minutes tonight. Again, you're always a wealth of information. And again, I know my audience is better off for learning about all different lifestyles, certainly the importance of LGBT awareness and tolerance. And again, we're happy to do that here on Politically Direct. And we're happy to do that inside our NJ, as you know, we're obviously all proud supporters of GSC. And we'll continue doing that, man. So stay well, enjoy the rest of your fall, and we'll talk again soon here on Politically Direct.
Okay, Fernando, thanks so much for having me on, and I hope to see you at the Equality Walk later in October.
I did get the mailer. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right here. Yes, October 11th in Trenton, October 12th at Atlantic City at 10 a.m., Asbury Park, 4 p.m., and folks, October 13th at Montclair at 12 p.m. As a matter of fact, I was actually going to mention this at the end of the broadcast tonight, but thanks for bringing it to my attention now, Christian. I'll definitely try to make the Montclair one because it's the closest one to me.
Okay, sounds good. See you then.
Have a good one, brother. God bless, brother. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Take care now, man. All right, folks, 9:53 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. Great conversation tonight, a little over 40 minutes here tonight with the Executive Director of Garden State Equality, Christian Foscarino. Folks, again, as a reminder, I know you just brought it up right now, but the Equality Walk weekend is coming up, the 10th annual one. Certainly, your chance to celebrate the 15 years of Garden State Equality. Certainly, I get in the newsletter here as I've attended the Equality Ball before. I'm certainly happy to donate to them and the good work that they're doing. So, you know, if you have had a chance, check them out again, www.garstateequality.org. As a reminder, folks, you can register now at their website, www.equalitywalk.us. And it is the 10th annual Equality Walk weekend, again, at Trenton, starting at 1 p.m., also on Saturday, October 12th. In Atlantic City at 10 a.m. and certainly at 4 p.m. at Asbury Park. And, of course, running out the weekend, it will be at Montclair starting at 12 p.m. Again, www.equalitywalk.us. Certainly check out the curriculum and check out what they're advocating for the rest of 2018 and going into – I'm sorry, the rest of 2019 going into – 2020. So again, folks, I can't say enough here. Check it out. Support Garden State Equality. They're a great organization. As I said here on the program, I'm always about inclusivity. I'm always about tolerance and acceptance. And listen, I know that for a lot of people tuning in tonight, I think when you look at my social media, I think sometimes I can be a little bit of a smart ass. I like to joke around. I have a very sort of unique sense of humor. Just growing up during an era where I grew up listening to Howard Stern and other comedians and disc jockeys, I really didn't have a filter. I think that's kind of where I learned it from. But the bottom line is, folks, that despite my sense of humor and despite the fact that it's not always very politically correct, you know, one thing I've learned over the years, and this is something that I really value and something that, you know, I'll sort of put out there personally, you know, one of our, with my family, one of my dearest friends or one of our dearest family friends was indeed a gay couple. And certainly earlier this year, having one of them pass away was a really sort of a big punch in the nuts to our family. And, you know, the fact that her partner is still alive and still very healthy, thank the Lord, reminds us that, you know, from a very young age, you know, I learned about the importance of acceptance and tolerance and making sure that, you know, that I was inclusive. And, you know, I remember earlier this spring having her pass away. You know, that, again, as I said, that was a real slap in the face to my family because I remember how much it stung, you know, growing up as a child with her and her mother, who was always so great to my family, and her partner, who was in a, just a stand-up lady, who I believe is almost 8 years old, and she's still alive and kicking, thank the Lord. But, you know, at a young age, you know, I really, really learned the importance of respect. And I remember how grateful I was as a child to grow up with them because they were such a great couple. And as I got older and certainly understood more about the LGBT community and certainly understood more about them, you know, to me, it was always about, hey, they're great family friends. I'll walk through fire for them because of how good, decent people they are. Certainly one of them has passed. So the other is still alive and kicking, thank the Lord, down in South Florida. So God bless, friend. Really, God bless everybody, folks, here tonight, you know, in the LGBT community in New Jersey. I know it's not easy in terms of sometimes what you're enduring, what you're tolerating, what you have to put up with. But, you know that good people like Christopher Scarino and GSC are working hard to sort of stand up for you. And here on Politically Direct, we're doing the same things here. So, again, to everybody tuning in tonight, I hope you found the episode to be interesting. I know I always do when I have Christian on. He's a wealth of information. And, you know, listen, we may not agree on a lot of things ideologically in the sense of politics. I mean, I don't think that – I think it's pretty safe to say that when it comes to, like, our solidarity and support for the LGBT community, it's there with Christian Priscarino. We may not agree on party issues, and we may not agree on presidential candidates, and we may not agree on just some policy positions, really, that maybe have nothing to do with LGBT issues, right? But we're just sort of – we have different opinions. But you know what? That's the great thing about our democracy, that we can agree or disagree, and we can do it civilly. Again, that's an example when I talked to Christian on this program, and he's been on multiple times. This is not his first rodeo here on the show. He's always very, very gracious and very, you know, amicable to questions and transparent. So that's why I appreciate him coming on here. And certainly, again, God bless the good work that he does. Folks, here, wrapping up here at the top of the hour, what a great episode it was here tonight on Politically Direct. Folks, if you missed any part of the broadcast, you can always go to www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural with an S, podcast. And you can listen to not only tonight's episode in its entirety, you can do so from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Download it, listen to it anywhere at any time. And don't forget, folks, that every Thursday night live at 9 p.m., you can listen to the best analysis and commentary about everything going on in New Jersey politics, and it's always right here on Politically Direct. Now, again, if you have a topic or issue you want to hear about or maybe some feedback about tonight's show, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I love to get emails. I answer them promptly. Certainly, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. Also, you can follow me directly on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe, as well as hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, folks. Tons of new likes and followers each and every day. Without you, my loyal listening audience, on all the aforementioned social media platforms, without you, again, my loyal listeners, the success of this program would not be possible. So, again, folks, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, just walking your dog for my students, doing homework, you know, walking your dog, anything, take a break. Tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. Never forget that it's real. It's here. It's Politically Direct. Good night. Actually, you know what? A few cities tonight. I'm going to say good night to Trenton, to Atlantic City, to Asbury Park, and Montclair, New Jersey, all hosts of the Equality Walk Weekend coming up next month. Again, check out for more information, www.equalitywalk.us. Benefit, Garden State Equality. Folks, have a wonderful weekend. Please party responsibly. It's still some good weather, folks. Even though it's fall, it still feels like summer in a lot of parts of New Jersey. So I'm sure that you'll be down the shore maybe enjoying the last few warm days at the beach. For everybody else, enjoy your football Sunday. Certainly enjoy as the baseball playoffs start next week. Let's go Yankees as they pursue their 28th World Series championship. Let's hope that by the end of October, I might be freezing, but hopefully I'll be in a parade in downtown Manhattan in the Canyon of Heroes celebrating the Yankee World Series title. Let's hope, God willing. Folks, again, enjoy your weekends. Enjoy whatever you're doing. Enjoy NFL football. Hopefully my Cowboys go to 4-0. Right now, for my South Jersey fans, right now, right before the half, it seems, it's going to be 21-20. Eagles in a must-win situation at Lambeau Field tonight. Seems like the Eagles came to play and will not go down quietly. We'll find out here. I think the Packers just scored. Yes, it's 21-20 with 9 seconds to go in the second quarter. Apparently, most likely we'll head to the half. Should be a very entertaining second half, folks, on Thursday Night Football on the NFL Network again via Fox. So enjoy that. We'll see what happens, folks. But again, please party responsibly. Enjoy your weekend. Again, thank you so much for listening here. Again, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com. Once again, for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And never forget, folks, you start your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Get a good feeling, yeah.